This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello, ladies and
girls.
Listeners, ladies and girls. Ladies and listeners.
We've just had a sprawling off-air conversation, which I always hate to do without you guys eavesdropping. But we were just talking about basically how it feels. It feels weird and like a disconnect, because obviously we've been getting on the pod and been chatting so happily and funnily and joking about fucking brothers if you're on the Patreon and et cetera, but which I was lying in bed last night tossing and turning over.
It was some of our best audio today.
Oh my God. But at the same time, how obviously it's still such an intense, devastating, horrific time in Gaza, and that's still so front of mind, and it feels weird, and you feel almost guilty to continue living your lives as normal, but it's kind of like all you sort of can do while helping. And I do think that getting into like a hole, which I was most definitely in for a few weeks of like literal depression, doesn't do anyone any good. And you know, we're so privileged and so lucky to be able to continue living the lives that we have, and it's just, I think, being so grateful and being so thankful and being so aware of our privilege and how lucky we are is like so important right now. Like at Kylie Minogue, I was literally dancing at Kylie Minogue being like, I can't believe I'm here. I'm so grateful and lucky and thankful to be safe and to have like friends and family around me and a roof over my head. And I just think that's like such a important thing to keep front of mind and at the same time continue pushing for a ceasefire. Because now, yeah, 10,000 people have died, which is an astronomical number. 99.6% of those are civilians. So it's
just horrifying. It's a very difficult time, yeah, to be on the world or be online. And then you have stretches of time where you're not thinking about it, or you're working, you're doing things or celebrating or whatever. And then retroactively, I think you feel embarrassed or weird, or I don't know, it feels like a very confusing time to like navigate the world.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing we talked about when we spoke about it a few weeks ago, was that idea of sort of getting used to it. And I don't think we are getting used to it, because I don't think, you know, seeing like the videos and hearing the stories that we're hearing are just the most insane, devastating things we've ever heard. And I think we will have like a collective trauma after this, but at the same time, just kind of like, I think it's very easy to sort of not understand the magnitude of it. Like even just then, I was reading a New York Times article about how because people are pushing so hard for a ceasefire, because of all the marches and because of all the talk about it and because of all the posting, which is incredible, Biden is feeling the pressure. I think they polled Americans and like 66% wanted a ceasefire. So he's feeling the pressure to put pressure on the Israeli Netanyahu to have a ceasefire or at least pauses. And I was reading this article and it said that Netanyahu said he'll consider little breaks of around an hour of bombing. So to put that into perspective, that's bombing every hour on the hour for 30 days.
I mean, this was the thing as well that what's so complicated about this, I was thinking about this week, is that ceasefires become the rallying cry, which is very, very important. And like you say, it is having like a tangible effect. But I have this like fear as well that a ceasefire will only be for any given short amount of time. I feel, you know, it's like a very somber and depressing thought. Like you say, this idea of this concession of a ceasefire, it's always going to be a kind of temporary thing. It's not a band-aid solution.
Yeah, everyone's celebrating about this ceasefire, but what does it mean? Where do we go from here? It's really devastating. It's even crazy, like thinking about the journalists on the ground who everyone's been following and you know, the faces that you kind of know off by heart now. They're like 24 years old and like 22 years old. It's just beyond the shit they're having to see and having to report on for their jobs. And I keep just thinking like one day we might wake up and they just might not be there anymore. And that's like a very real possibility. Mm-hmm. So yeah, not to bring the vibes down, but just to let everyone know that this is still so front of mind and it should be for all of us. And we should be using our privilege to kind of push for people who have less than us, and petitions and marches, and just continue pushing. But yeah, as you say, Grace, it's sad because where we go from here is a really complicated and confusing and unclear thing, which I think is terrible.
And the stakes of it just feel, as we were saying before off air, like this, it just feels like the broader implications of what's happening and what it means for like humanity, it all just does feel very existential and very like, I don't know, just big. I feel like we had this sense that coming out of the pandemic, we'd gone through this horrible thing as a society and that we would like come out of that and that would be the horrible thing that we went through. And like the fact that it's just been this like successive horror story of news since then, and that the implications of that makes you feel like that's not going to necessarily stop soon. I think there is just this general heaviness that everyone is feeling because it's not, there isn't this clear other side of
no.
it. It feels like everything's going to get a lot worse before it gets
better. And it's hopelessness. Like it's like the first week of the marches in London, I felt hopeful, I felt empowered, I felt like, I don't know, the sense of community being around these people. The second week of the marches in LA, I felt the same. It was my first time marching in LA. It also felt more intense because I was in a place that's like so supporting this and literally my taxpayer money is going towards it. I haven't paid taxes yet though, you fucking pricks. I'm gonna withhold them. That, and then the third week and the fourth week, I like literally every single Saturday since this began, like the last 2 weeks, I've just been like sobbing on the street, like just sobbing because it just feels helpless. It's like if there's 500,000 people marching, like, and we're not making a change, it does get you down in the dumps. But it is obviously putting pressure on the governments. So it is making a difference.
Yeah, I think it's this awareness that so many people I've spoken to have had recently of stuff like world wars feeling so unimaginable and so far away. And the idea that like, you know, governments or just people not acting in the best interest of their citizens and the people that they're supposed to protect can happen on this mass scale, and that it doesn't really matter how many people get together or how wrong people know it is. Like, it just happens. Like, the impulse for power and dominance and violence and aggression on this mass scale, that's at least what I feel I'm trying to get my head around, is that I've carried this idea, and I think it's weird that it coincides with turning 30, because I feel like I've always carried this very rosy, rose-tinted glasses, which I'm sure many of us have, idea that humans are good and the only times they're bad is like a bug in the system. And it feels like this experience recently of the last year of news stories as well, I think is just, and maybe it's getting older too, is realizing that it's not a bug in the system. It's like it's a inherent part of human nature, is like the power, the desire to dominate, the desire to, you know what I mean, to control, to the willingness to stoop to levels of violence that are so unimaginable. Like, just that is something that I'm trying to get my head around, and I guess can't, because it's insane.
Yeah. Or like when you think, yeah, I guess when you think back, like I just watched a very good new Netflix show, actually, All the Light You Cannot See, based off that really famous book that came out a couple of years ago. I don't even know the author's name, but it's really good. It's a 4-part miniseries, and it's set in Nazi-occupied France during World War II. And even just seeing like the soldiers coming in and like taking over Paris and everyone fleeing, and then the bombs dropping like on this... Oh, like obviously I know we lived in London and like we're around places that have been bombed and stuff before, but just like... watching it and just realizing, just seeing like that regime and I don't know, it's absolutely wild. And like I think it's so easy to kind of dehumanize everyone back then. Like I think you're just sort of like, how the fuck could anyone have let that happen? And then it's like, yeah, it's just like people had no fucking choice. Like I don't know, just it's just the amount of power that like governments and stuff hold over us is like quite fucking scary.
And yeah, it's really scary. And then the impulse for, power and money is power. Like that, the actual impact of that. And we walk around day to day not thinking too much about it and feeling a certain level of like freedom and ability to control. You know what I mean? We live in a democracy, so if we raise our voices to a certain point, we can control things. We have this false sense of control that like from COVID till now is really being like chipped away at. I've never felt more, I don't know what the word is, powerless is maybe the word, like something. I've never had a better sense of how I'm just one little speck in this universe more than recently.
Yeah. And it's even that thing of like, yeah, looking deeper into those, how they assert that power and how they like divide the rest of us is so interesting. Like even just learning about like, I mean, it's like such a thing with like the model minority, you know, like Asians, Asian Americans being like favored as the minority group. And then that creates racism between other races who aren't like white. So it's like, yeah, I don't know, black people racist, Indian people racist towards black people, or like there becomes this pole, this like, what is it? Like ladder that goes down because everyone's asserting power over the other person trying to get closer to the top of like the white supremacy ladder. Like it's all so crazy.
And like in Australia, again, I don't want to go too deep into this because this conversation will just depress us and therefore you listening to tears. But I think there's been so many domestic violence murders in Australia in the last couple of like months. I think there was like 10 in 6 weeks or something. And some of them are just, the details of them, I just can't get out of my brain and can't stop thinking about. And it's even that feeling of like women are making all this headway in society in all of these really tangible, important ways that we all feel like things are changing. And then you're just like, but men can just kill us with their bare hands if they want to. like anyone, like that reminder as well. This idea that like the there are power dynamics that we work so hard to push through, and like we are pushing through them. But yeah, like you're saying, there's this hierarchical thing in society yeah. that we keep trying to like.
Well, like how there's so much racism towards Greek people in Australia. Like you don't even like know that until you move there. Like it's like what? It's just there's just racism like everywhere between like to try and break everyone up. I don't know. It's wild. But yeah, my friend last night, he literally was out around my, at my house for dinner and was like, we need to change subjects. It's so depressing. Just kidding. But he was just like, oh yeah. And I don't even know how this came up. And he was like, yeah. And the murder of that girl in New Zealand last year and her dad and her dog. And I was like, oh yeah, that was my friend. You know, like it's so crazy that happened last year. Like just the amount of shit that's.
Yeah, it all like feels closer to like obviously that was literally like close to home, fucking horrendous. But it all feels. I feel like in the past these news stories felt so far away. I think maybe that's what it is. It felt like there was this huge distance between horrifying things you saw on the news and your life, and it feels like maybe the older you get, or maybe it's the way social media works, or maybe it's whatever. But it just feels like that gap is getting smaller and smaller, and you're like, oh, these are people just like you and me. These are literally just people that like want all the same things that we do. Like it's just luck of the fucking draw. That's like something you just don't think about when you're younger, I don't think.
Like I caught myself, this is gonna sound so uneducated, but I like caught myself kind of double glancing at a girl in Gaza who was like recording because she had like her nails done. You know, she just had like a really nice manicure. And I was like, oh my God, before this she was sitting at a nail salon having her nails done. And now she's in rubble on the street. Like it's beyond. Mm. And yeah, and I think because we were younger, like with 9/11, we just didn't understand what the fuck was going on. We were like, go and get the baddies. Like, and no idea what that meant for civilians and literal people. It's crazy. And I think, it's so important to continue doing our research and, listening to podcasts, watching documentaries, reading books, and educating ourselves, even if we don't feel comfortable, like, publicly speaking. Just to know what's going on in the world around us. I think that's where we can get our power back. Knowledge is power.
Knowledge is power. Yeah. Yeah.
Knowledge.
A depressing 15. Okay. That was our, what do we call it? Our vibe check. Our mental, our check-in.
Our vibe check. I just felt it was important because I was like, it just feels totally disingenuous to like, I don't know, just act like everything is fine on the podcast when everything is not fine.
Talk like that off air, then jump on. Yeah. I mean, exactly. This has always been our thing, is that whatever we're saying off air is probably exactly the thing.
What, like, we should be talking
that
about.
That was our big first thing. This is when we found our groove as AWD, is when we started recording what we were saying before we started recording instead of what we'd planned to say.
Yeah, exactly. Like last week's Patreon episode where we were just like, we haven't done any prep, and then we talked for so long and everyone loved it.
Yes, that was a good one.
Okay, changing the subject, changing it up. It feels a bit weird to delve into something that is like a personal celebration, an AWD P-brain celebration, but we must, as you say, continue feeling so privileged and so blessed that with us today we have the new editor of Elle Australia. Wait, why did you write editor and not editor-in-chief? Was that just because you just like writing editor?
It's a company thing that they don't do EIC anymore, which I actually kind of understand. I know EIC sounds more sophisticated, but it is a bit of an odd fish of a title, in-chief, the chief.
Okay, chief.
Of the magazine. Yes.
But so exciting. News. I was so happy to be in London when Grace found out about it. We were actually out for a bougie pre-birthday champagne lunch.
Yes, we never talked about that, did we? Talk about that fun lunch?
I don't think
that would have made a good episode after that. I was so lit. I was just like walking around Soho.
We were so drunk. We were ordering like
and crazy
15 pound glasses of champagne, and he just kept topping us up, and we were like, get it, boy.
What was his name? Kevin.
He was like 80.
Shout out to Kevin. Yes, we had a little celebration then.
No one better for the job. Also, in like yeah, I don't know. It just felt so cute to me when you told me, because I know that your first internship was Vogue, right? But like Elle was where you had where you wrote your first ever print feature, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So cute. She showed me the Facebook post like years ago of her holding up an open Elle magazine. That's what you should have fucking posted, you pussy.
I did track it down somewhere. The Facebook photo will get its day in court, but it's not yet.
Not for the gram? Not for the chic gram.
It could be a slider, maybe.
First issue.
But yeah, no, it feels really exciting. I think the thing that's always resonated the most about Elle is this idea of looking at fashion from this more sort of holistic lens, bringing in books and pop culture and politics and, you know, really longer reads. It's a smart magazine. It just feels like the scope within that is so huge, because as we know with this podcast, there are a lot of really fucking smart women who are looking for that kind of content. So yeah, I'm really excited. And we're bringing it back. It hasn't been published in Australia it'll be 4 years when we come back in March. So it's also a really fun opportunity to, you know, start from scratch in some ways and do something new and kind of different. It feels really fun.
That's really sweet. I'm so excited. No one better for the job. Also, we were like laughing when we were out for lunch, because I was like, come to think of it, you have made some like smart career moves by accident. Parfum and like doing such an incredible job at having like this independent magazine. And like, yeah, it just made so much sense when they said that. And I was like, oh my God, yes. I mean, I always knew you were going to edit a magazine. Didn't think it would be quite so soon. Sound like your parents.
Mom. I mean, it was that really weird thing where it just felt like all these, this is what gets strange as you get older. It felt like all these weird things had aligned in this very bizarre way.
Yeah.
Which was really, 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 really nice. I've got a few comments being like, this is not very pea brain of you. I was like, I know.
No, someone said you need to, someone who got 130 likes, one of them was me.
Really?
Yeah. Your comments, the post has gone viral, Grace.
I had to put my phone away. I was having like a vulnerability hangover thing and I just had to delete Instagram off my phone, but I only lasted like an hour. And then I was like,
refreshing like a maniac. Yeah. I know. I was doing that. I was like, I've been in there like four separate times scrolling, because obviously we know so many of the same people.
The well wishes. Yeah. Yeah.
And then, yeah, a girl said something like, I have to officially retire the pea brain title now. And she got 130 likes. Really? My comment got fucking like 50 likes. And all I said was, yes, she is. It's all the AWD girlies.
I love it. The girlies coming
so
out.
So nice. I was trying to go onto your Instagram, but it just opened a video.
Oh, man.
You'll be working with my former editor-in-chief, Nikki Brigger, who's a fucking angel sent from the heavens above, and Ali, our former boss.
It's literally the dream team. It's the dream team. That was like such a big, my whole, because it's a big, I know it's an incredible honor. It's not like I was like umming and ahhing about doing it, but it made me think a lot about.
Yeah. It's like going home and changing.
Yeah, it's a lot of huge things. And I just was doing a lot of like, I guess, soul searching about work and the future and what I want work to look like. And I just, it sounds corny, but I just do genuinely feel this. Like the guiding thing in my life is just having a day-to-day life where you are surrounded by people who are like nice people. You enjoy spending time with and enjoy working with and like respect that. I just think that if you just make that the priority, everything else kind of falls into place.
Yeah.
And yeah, we got a good gang.
Yeah. Such a great support network. Ali's our podcast mama. She's a listener who just did the New York Marathon. Can you believe?
Which is literally insane.
And like, no, and her time was crazy. Like her time, she killed it. Like I think she got like 3 hours 30 something minutes, and that's very fast. So like to put it into perspective, I would want to run a half. I would try and run a half, which is half of that distance, in 2 hours, in less than 2 hours. So like a full would be like less than 4 hours would be what I'd be trying to aim for. And she cut like a half hour off that. Like she was fucking
wow,
killing it. And yeah, so yeah, really, really proud. I love seeing all of the stuff from, I can't believe the New York Marathon. It's just like the most beautiful day ever, even watching it from afar.
Yeah. There's something about your friends running marathons. It's just, it's like, I don't know. I just like everyone can work it, like, knows how hard it is to run. So everyone's like, this is such an achievement.
Yeah. And all the signs and like, I don't know, I saw someone propose to someone.
Yeah, everyone shows up for their friends.
Like someone was holding a sign being like, will you marry me?
That is crazy.
And they just ran up. Yeah, it's beyond. I think New York goes harder than everywhere else. I have what's it called? To change the subject from your gorgeous promote job.
No, we've exhausted that. Yeah.
I've signed up for the Chicago Marathon next year.
Have you really? A full marathon?
Yeah.
That is so impressive, Izzy. That's crazy. Why Chicago? Is it?
It's just like one of the cool places. So there's like Chicago, New York, and Boston are the three big ones in America. And New York, I think you have to, same with Chicago, you have to enter a lottery. So you don't even know if you're chosen. That's why I was surprised Ali got it. Yeah, you can't just enter because it's so popular. And I think with Boston, you have to like get in on a certain time. You have to beat a time and a half to be able to get into it. It's like so crazy.
Wow.
But yeah, doing the LA half March 19, and then we'll just keep training. But that's the thing that I just can't be fucked for, is like not even running the race. It's the training, because the training for a marathon is mental. It's like you're having to run almost a marathon often to be able to do like it's just like long and boring,
and just like the discipline. I think I've said on the pod before that my brother runs like ultra marathons. He just ran 120k run. Took him like
so mental
a day, like 10 hours. He's
so funny. That's your brother.
I know, it's so hard to like, he's so disciplined. He's like so the opposite of me in so many ways. It's just amazing. And I've said to him so many times, like, how do you get disciplined in that way? But he's like, if you actually want to run something like that, even like a long distance run, the only way it works is if you literally show up X amount of times a week and actually just go do it.
Yeah.
Like you can't cheat it. You can't leave it till the last minute. You can't like not practice for months and then like days before just go hard. Like the only way to do it is like consistency.
Yeah. I mean, also like
amazing.
The other, a couple of months ago, when I got back from London, my friends were going for a run and they were running 17.8K because they were training for a half marathon. And I was just like, I'm just going to come and see how much I can do. And I hadn't run properly. I hadn't run more than 15K in my life. And that was in January. And this is September. Mm-hmm. But I do run like 2 to 3 times a week, but it's literally like 5 to 7 to 10K max. Anyway, I just ran with them 18K, did it. Was exhausted, but did it. But then like almost fucked my leg. Like, I was like, you can't do that shit. Like, you're too old. You need to like train. Like it's like you might even physically be able to push yourself to do it. But like I almost screwed up my leg after that. And I was like, you're so dumb. Like, this is why people train for these things. It's just like not a joke to go and put your body through for 2 hours.
It's a lot to put your body through. And I know when you're like 20, your body can get away with stuff, but I don't even think it's so much an age thing. It's just a like body thing.
Yeah.
Your body needs to be, it's a finely
properly have to warm up and stretch, which is the most boring things in the world.
So boring.
But yeah, I've been doing a thing where I've been trying to run every morning and just do like 3K, because I think I have this other thing with exercise in my head. I'm very like all or nothing. And I'll try and, you know, like if I go for a run, I'm like, okay, well, you have to at least run 5K or there's no point in you doing exercise. I'm kind of like that with exercise. Like I want to like go to a HIIT class and be dripping in sweat, or I'm just like, what was the fucking point? But I've been trying to go on these little cute 3K runs through the streets to this cafe, and I'll run there in the morning. And then I'll sit and have a coffee by myself, and then I'll walk home. And it's like, that's better than not doing anything. And it's such a nice start to the morning. And like yesterday I did the 3K run, sat and had a coffee for like an hour, did some emails on my phone, was just sitting in the sun by myself. And then by the time I stood up and was like ready to go home, I was like, oh, I could just run this. Like I actually feel like it. So then I did 6.5K.
Mm-hmm.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
How good are mornings? I feel like doing a morning routine has quite literally changed my life. An underrated topic is how you spend your morning.
Well, yes, but this is actually quite funny because it's sort of the opposite of my usual morning routines. Usually I'm so strict, as Grace knows, when we first went freelance, I'd be like harassing her to get on the Central Line into Central London by 9 a.m. for like a podcast prep. I don't even know, to like talk about our AWD Instagram account or something. Which in peak hour is like that rush hour traffic is like hell on earth. Like people like kill each other on the fucking Central Line. Like it is depraved.
Oh my god. It's yeah.
And yeah, so I'm usually really strict. Like I have a morning alarm that goes off at 7 a.m. every morning. And then this week I've just been like, dude, just fucking sleep. Like sleep if you want to sleep. And then I'm still doing the morning routine, even if it's at. I mean, this is obviously so lucky being freelance, and not everyone can do this, but. I woke up yesterday at like 9, and then instead of being like, well, now my day is out of whack and now I've got to rush to get to work, I was like, no, go for your run, do your 3K run, have your coffee, walk home. Who gives a fuck if it's 10:30 by that time, because you're going to be so much more motivated to work later. You're going to be in a better mood. Like, yeah, protecting that mindset is such a key thing. Not going on Instagram first thing in the morning, not checking my emails first thing gets me into like a doom spiral.
And it's also like you say, we're so lucky to do that freelance, and that's true, but it's also like you give up. This is the thing I constantly have to remind myself, and it's something I'm becoming aware of now as I'm moving into like not being freelance anymore, which is that you give up a lot to have that freedom. Like you give up the security of sick leave and annual leave and superannuation and maternity leave and like health insurance. There's a lot of shit, you know what I mean, that you forego to have the right to like sleep in one day if you need to, or like own timeline. And we have so much like guilt around our productivity. I mean we all struggle with that. We've internalized capitalism so much that it terrifies me. But
no, massively. Like even today I was like okay, you just need to work, you need to really focus Wednesday, Thursday, Friday so you can take a weekend this weekend. Because what I do is I'll like muck around during the days, or I'll consider it mucking around. For example, like it's now 9:14 in the morning. Obviously, this is work, but it like doesn't feel like work.
It doesn't feel like work.
So then after this, I need to still go for that run because I slipped in. And then I'll be like, oh, you've mucked around and now it's midday on a Wednesday, and then you have therapy at 3 and you basically did nothing today, so you have to work on the weekend. And I just work every weekend. And I'm like, this is so shit and dumb, and you should just take a fucking weekend off. Like, I'll be like, doing AWD. Like, I'm like, what even is there to do? Like, shut up.
Even today I was like eating, I was listening to the Air One article.
Oh my God, yes.
I quite like listening to them. And I was like, I need to be doing something else. So I was packing like a new batch of AWD merch orders as I was seeing. And that was the only way I could relax, because listening to an article didn't feel like work, even though it literally is work. I was like, I need to be doing work on top of the work. Otherwise I'll have that anxious lack of productivity.
Yeah. That's what Amar is also like, how long distance is hard. Cause we try and get on the phone, and obviously the time zones are so cursed. because you're on the time zone. So it's like 9 a.m.
LA, London is one of the worst.
9 a.m. for me, 5 p.m. for you. So like I will just wake up. His day's ending. He wants to chat because it's like 4 p.m., 3 p.m., which is like a nice time to chat. I'm like, I've just woken up. I'm stressed. I need to go for my run. I need to do X, Y, and Z. And then later when I want to chat, he's in bed. And at the same time, like any time we talk ever is during my working day. Because he's asleep by the time it's my 3 p.m. So that we'll get on the phone at like 1 and I'm trying to be present, but he can like hear me like typing or like cleaning the house. Because I'm just like, I'm making lunch. Like I can't sit still and talk to you right now because I like need to be. I was like furiously like scrubbing the toilet talking to him yesterday and he was like, oh my God. Like just trying to like do something at the same time.
Yeah. So crazy. I know, crazy peas.
Should we talk about the Erewhon article?
But speaking of the Erewhon article.
Oh my God, I love it. What a fucking piece.
I listened to it, then I read it afterwards because I was like, this is such a smart and amazing and interesting story.
Yes. So Erewhon, which we've talked about a bazillion times, the way it got into like
New York Magazine, by the way. Is that cover story or whatever?
A huge New York Magazine article on Erewhon, which is that bougie LA health food store that Hailey Bieber smoothie is at. I'm always at. I got my dinner from, like, literally got my groceries from there last night for dinner. And
what was the damage? Tell the truth.
I can't even remember. I zoned out. I literally can't remember. Probably like $40. I think I got cabbage, ricotta, and what did I get? I was making Alison Roman's dilly bean stew.
Oh, nice. That's so classic.
I got like some beans, some cabbage, some ricotta.
Some dill, I assume.
Some dill. yeah, and this piece, yeah, goes into the crazy cult-like backstory of how Erewhon came to be. And also just the way it really tapped into the vibe around the supermarket was so spot on. So it said, you know, your LA friends will roll their eyes at Erewhon. You know, like I'm just like, which is so funny because I'm like, I'm not even an Erewhon enthusiast. Like I think it's overpriced. Like I think the people that go there are wankers, but yet I'm just there. And then they said, but they also have a $200 a year membership, which I have. And then it was like, your New York friends will come as a joke, but they will come and their money is just as real. Like people go there to be like joking about how expensive a smoothie is, but they're still buying the fucking smoothie.
I was going to say when I read that, I thought that's probably the majority of the Erewhon clientele. Like even people I know who go to LA to get the smoothie, again, to post it as content, which I've seen a lot, which is a very funny, interesting part of this, which we'll talk about. But it's almost always ironic or jokey or eye-rolly or making fun of it. That's the amount of people that would actually go in and be like, yeah, I just love this activated seaweed that's $38. That's like no one. That's basically their business model by accident.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And then they like lean into that as well, which is they just did a smoothie collab with Tinks. That girl.
I forgot about Tinks.
I know. I forgot about her too till I saw her like witchy woo smoothie or something. I was like, sounds good.
She got cancelled. The comeback smoothie.
I'm so zoned out. I don't even know what she got cancelled for. But this is like, wait, you tell the backstory.
Okay, so the backstory is I'm gonna get their names up. I should have them. The backstory is, which is so fascinating, because if I had to guess, I would guess that Erewhon was created by like a totally cynical white, bright white corporate rooms venture capital fund that said we need to capitalize on the healthy food thing. And it was just created by some corporate machine. And the absolute opposite of what I ever imagined it would be was the actual story of the founders. So Aveline Yokoyama arrived in 1951 to America, and she was basically sent by this kind of cult-like leader in Japan called George Osawa to meet a man called Michio Kushi, who she ended up marrying and having children with. She arrived speaking no English, basically didn't even know. She was trying to get to Chicago, I think, and she just ended up
She like got off the bus at the wrong stop. She got off
in Omaha. Yeah, it was. She was just completely fish out of water, and she had come to meet this guy that this kind of, I don't know if you would call him a cult figure. But
he was like,
yeah,
a guru of
a
like
guru. Yeah,
and he'd written books about macrobiotic diets, right?
Yes. So he was a big believer in. And this is, I guess, what's very interesting about it. This big believer in food as medicine and this idea that food could solve a lot of health problems. And it was the macrobiotic diet. And a lot of the stuff that he pushed has later been proved to be crazy, but a lot of it has actually later been proved to be
correct.
And she arrived in America and met this man and they had children. And she basically, they started this kind of version of this sect, which doesn't have a name, in America. And they, because it was the late 50s, early 60s, they started to find a really big community of like the hippie generation who were really interested in pushing back against hyper-processed, corporatized American foods and who wanted to live off the land and blah, blah, blah. So they kind of created the first Erewhon as a like small kind of hippie granolary San Franny health food store, except that it was in, where was it, like Boston or like somewhere unexpected, yeah, Boston, on the East Coast, and actually took a long time for it to end up in LA, and it went through bankruptcy and went through like all these crazy periods of, they were like investigated by the FDA.
Yeah, went through all these crazy different owners. And yeah, what's so crazy about the macrobiotic diet thing is that like, what were they saying with some people dying? It's quite crazy. So it said here, oh yeah, so like Sanpaku means...
Oh yeah, the guy said that original guy, the guru guy, basically said that he could tell by how white someone's eyes were whether or not they would die like a violent death.
Yes.
And he named a bunch of people and they were like, a bunch of them turned out to be correct. It was like JFK and who was the other big one? Marilyn Monroe.
And the way you can cure that is through your eating. So the book advises increasing salt, severely restricting liquids. Women should urinate twice a day max and chewing every mouthful 50 times. A 24-year-old woman on the Lower East Side, Beth Ann Simon, thought perhaps she was too sanpaku, possibly anorexic. She put herself on an extremely strict macrobiotic diet, wrote to Oshawa and ignored the advice of her alarmed family. She dropped more and more weight and eventually she died. Like,
that's
so
really
wild.
Sad.
So sad.
I mean, that's just evidence, I guess, of something that continues to be true today, which is like, if you have disordered eating, you will just use any like health food trend as an excuse to,
yes,
like further restrict yourself.
And how like the American hippies would arrive from the West Coast and they'd live in the vicinity of like, they all kind of started living like in an area together and then they'd become speaking like with broken English.
Yeah.
The American hippies. They'd start copying the broken English Japanese.
Well, that was an interesting thing where they said that the broken Japanese would call pizza pie. Like, that was the thing. And I wondered if that's how that just became a thing in America. But
pizza
maybe
pie.
Yeah. It's a weird thing that people say there.
Yeah, claimed the diet cured AIDS.
Yeah, so this is what was, I mean, iconic in the, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, obviously quite troubling at the time. But her husband... the George Oshawa guy, which her and her husband promoted, believed that like meat and salmon and like all of these bizarre things were terrible for you and you should never eat them, but believed that smoking was natural and organic. So
yeah,
all these people that were on the diet like died of lung cancer and they would just say it was from something else. So it just shows you any sort of cult-like thinking is just crazy. But I guess back then they didn't have the basis of science. You know what I mean? It was all just going off vibes.
Yeah.
Vibes and feelings.
It says as well in the piece that Erewhon is one of those phenomena that is ever present if you're tuned in and invisible if you are not. Isn't that just a grocery store? Asked a friend who has lived in LA all her life. No, it's not, and has never been just a grocery store. It exists within and has always occupied a space between commerce and cult, which is so true. And then talking about just how like yeah, the vibes in there. One thing I found quite interesting was the person who said, in New York, you're like exhausted by the time you get home. You've been on public transport all day. You've bumped into like 50,000 people. You've been social. You've been out. Whereas in LA, it's like the complete opposite. You're kind of in your house. You're in your car. You can kind of avoid seeing people for the most part. And so going into Air One kind of feels like this community space. And that's kind of what they've like fostered. And
that was fascinating to me because it makes so much sense. But I hadn't thought about it that way at all. But like, why do so many people congregate in this space? It's obviously designed in this really beautiful, specific way to make it enjoyable being in there. But yeah, that idea that in Los Angeles, where people can go days and days and days without accidentally brushing past a person or even without kind of seeing people, that there's somewhere you can go and feel surrounded by people.
Yeah, because I was thinking that last night. Like, I was like, why did I go to Air One to get that stuff and not to a different supermarket? And it's funny because I was just like, in London, I would just go to the closest Tesco, but it's because you don't have a car. So you just go to Tesco, even though it's depraved. And here I have like a Ralph's at the end of my corner. It's only like a 5-minute walk away, but Ralph's just feels so sad. And I also don't like, I don't know. It's like there's such a like supermarket thing here. And Whole Foods feels gross too. Like it's too big, too supermarkety. I don't like it in there. And Air One just feels nice. It's just like a nice store to go into. But I wouldn't go there to like buy proper groceries usually ever. The only reason I did last night was because I was buying like two things.
That was another fascinating thing that I loved about this story was that the store is purposefully designed. So it's almost whatever, floor to ceiling shelves. It's intentional that you can't reach certain products. So you have to get someone on the staff to help you, which I hate the idea of personally. I think I hate asking people for help, but but it's designed to always be so fully staffed that if you ever need to grab something, there will be someone like next to you nearby who smiles and says, I can do it. And the idea that that is the ultimate luxury now is to walk into a store and actually get served. I was like, that is so fucking true. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Having someone actually be attentive and say, how can I help you today? That's like luxurious now.
And they were also talking about how much they nailed it with realizing that snacking was the thing that was coming back. So it's like, we don't want those huge, big bins of barley that we're going to take home and cook. And in Air One, the whole thing, like the thing that they would make most of their money off, the thing that regular people who aren't the 1% go there to spend money on, is you walk in and there's the hot counter, which has hot plates. So you could get, like a 3-thing hot plate. And you get like salmon and then two sides. So you could get buffalo cauliflower or you could get Mighty Greens, which is like this delicious broccoli and bok choy mix. And you can have that for dinner or they have amazing chicken, like whatever. That there's also ready-made salads. They have like breakfast burritos. They have wraps. They have sushi. They have so much stuff that you just walk in and grab and it's all high quality and it's all delicious and it's all healthy. So they've really like nailed that healthy food very quickly thing. And then if you feel like a little treat, they have the most amazing array of like very, very healthy, delicious snacks, including that raw cinnamon roll I can't get enough of. And then, yeah, the smoothies, they just, it's that vibe that you walk in and you're like, oh, I could get, so someone can grab a smoothie if they feel like a smoothie, someone can grab it has everything and it's all delicious. And whereas other supermarkets, obviously, if you wanted to go in to even grab lunch, like what are you gonna do? How are you gonna grab a ready-made lunch at Tesco?
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that's where it becomes like a class thing again. It's like if you're willing to spend that much money on a lunch plate or a smoothie or a snack or whatever, then, and that, I think that's a very interesting part of this article, is which the writer ties in so well at the end, is this luxury, which is a class thing of time, like the fact that people go in there usually have time to wait 20-25 minutes for a smoothie, that usually they were like Hollywood execs or studio heads in the early iterations of Air One, where they'd go and just talk to the guy who made the smoothies for 30-40 minutes and they'd end up telling him their problems and he'd talk to them and make them specialist hand-brewed smoothies, and sometimes they would cost as much as $400 with the ingredients he was like putting in them. But that is such a specific type of like hyper luxury 1% thing. And I think that's what this comes back to, is that Air One is for the rich, basically. It, you know, it's some people who go there are super rich, some people aren't, and just buy like one or two cheaper things. But the, but you want the proximity to this idea that like true health has to be really expensive.
I mean, it's quite crazy. Like I don't go there, for lunch. Like I wouldn't just go. I just, try to avoid it as much as possible. Also, the other funny thing that they point out in the thing is I don't get smoothies from there ever, because their smoothies are not healthy. Like the Hailey, like some of the stuff there is really healthy, but the smoothies, like Hailey Bieber's smoothie is literally like strawberry syrup and yogurt mixed up with cream, coconut cream. Like it is like not healthy in any way. They put some sea moss gel in it and shit like that, but that thing is bad for you.
I remember Bella Hadid's just having like a pint of
orange juice
in it. I was like, that's crazy.
Yeah. So if I'm gonna spend money on a smoothie, I'll go to like Sun Life, which is packed with like nutrients and really, really healthy, or I'll make it at home. But it's quite funny, that vibe of thing. Because she was just saying, it's like, I can't even remember what she said. I pulled it out. But the smoothies are just dressed up like crap, basically.
Yeah, it's health as... And what's sinister and Black Mirror-y about it is that in America in particular, more than anywhere in the world, health is literally the ultimate privilege. Like, you need money to just have... like basic run of the mill health, and then to add to that the role that nutrition and food plays in like feeling healthier and being healthier is so massive. And Air One is just, I think, the pinnacle of that idea that, again, I don't think it's like people who just shopped at Air One would be healthier than people that don't, but it gives that veneer of, if you could only afford this blah, 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 sea moss gel for or sure. something, then you will be like Hailey Bieber. You will like glow from the inside out.
I've bought sea moss gel from them.
Yeah. I mean, those health food stores, you just walk in and you walk out and you're like, what happened?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the name Air One, I thought it was Nowhere Backwards, but it's not. It's a anagram of nowhere. Comes from a book by Samuel Butler called Air One. And it's a satirical book about a society in which sick people are sentenced to prison.
I know.
And if you get illness, the character is wrongly accused of having like appendicitis or something and has to go on the run. It's really funny. But that was the name of the book that Abilene, the founder, chose. And it's very clear from a memoir that she wrote that was very intentional, because that was kind of her sense of the world based off that guru.
Yeah.
That
like they weren't
healthy
even...
healthy people are.
Yeah. Superior.
Yeah, like if you're sick, it's your fault because you're not doing the things that you should be doing, which is still a thing that's so prevalent today, I think.
Yeah.
In a under the surface way.
Yeah, for sure. It's crazy.
People feel like it's the health, what do they call it, like health policing thing. There's this sense that like, is that true? I think that is true. It's true with people who are like, you know, overweight. There's this real like judgmental health policing thing around that. I don't think if like someone you know gets cancer, anyone is like, what did they do wrong? But I do think there's this sense that like, link between being healthy and morality or something.
Yeah. Well, they were saying there was a shame or guilt attached to people developing cancer in these circles, which I can so see being a thing. But yeah, how like, yeah, going back to how the extent of Air One invites our mockery is part of its strength. And like how someone put on TikTok, oh, you don't buy your eggs in a circle? Ask someone on TikTok holding 6 Air One eggs in a round package. Go back to Whole Foods. Or like if your annual income is $500,000 a year, Whole Foods is that way because it's not enough money. God, it's so American, isn't it?
It is so ridiculous.
So crazy.
And even that, we're all so, I mean, when I hear like eggs in a circle, I'm like, I want that. That's just my knee-jerk reaction. And mm-hmm. it's so dumb.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, it's so easy. It's really too easy for them to sucker in morons like us.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I went there the other day. I went for a run or a walk, I can't remember, and I got to Erewhon and I was just going to buy a coffee, and I never, like, I literally never buy their smoothies because I know that I can make a better for me smoothie at home and that tastes just as delicious for literally like a dollar. And then I was just standing there watching all these cute people buying smoothies for their breakfast, and I was like, I want a little treat, and then just left with like a coffee and a smoothie, couldn't even hold them, and it was like $30 US. And I was like, but you're walking home right now, you could just make this. But I just saw the girls with them, and I was like, a beautiful little treat. It's like Treat Central.
It's not as fun,
that place.
Treat Central, and it's very like, I know you would not like TikTok yourself getting a smoothie, but like that, like it's very content-y. Like people, you see stuff and it's immediate and quick, and then you want to get that yourself. And then when you get it, you feel like you're part of this, whatever it is, tribe.
Yeah, it's that their content that reinforces the treat in your head, because people are celebrating mm-hmm. having it. So you're like, well, I want that treat.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're like, and people on TikTok try the expensive products to talk about how expensive they are and whether they were worth it, but in the end, they're still buying it.
Yeah, and so the cycle continues.
My favorite place in the world.
Yeah, it feels so uniquely LA that I'm.
Yes.
They said like. We are going to launch in New York. We are going to launch in New York. And I imagine it will do well anywhere it is, but I would be very interested to see how well it does in places outside of LA. There's something great about it just being in LA.
That's what I mean. It feels so uniquely LA because of those factors. This is what I'm saying. Like, it feels so uniquely LA because of those factors, like the influences and the content curation and how like LA vibesy it is. But then you walk in and you're like, oh shit, it's got all the good stuff. Like, then you just spend your money. Yeah. So that's what I mean. Like, it just does do well because you go in to be like, what is this shit place where all these influencers come? And like, what's the big deal about it anyway? I can just go to a different supermarket. And then you're like, wow, a raw cinnamon roll? What? Yeah, they fucking get you. They do a good job. Like, they actually do. They have all of the most amazing, like, non-alcoholic. You go into like down one aisle, and the amount of cans is such a huge thing. I don't know if they're a huge thing where you are, but there's such a big thing here. Everyone has canned drinks all the time. So like canned non-alcoholic sodas, Olipops, like canned non-alcoholic Aperol spritzes. I brought two of them from Erewhon yesterday and then put them in a...
So nice.
Yeah. And so you go down an aisle and you're like, oh, all of this incredible non-alcoholic drinks, or like these amazing, the best seltzers in the market. Like, they get the girls, man.
They get the girls. I have to say, I went to a work dinner last night for a brand called Wild Idol, which is a new non-alcoholic like champagne and champagne rosé brand. And like the bottle is so beautiful, and they've like figured out how to make it so that when it pops, it fizzes. Like, you literally feel like you're drinking champagne.
So nice.
And it tastes, obviously it's like, doesn't taste exactly like champagne because it's non-alcoholic, but it tastes really good for non-alcoholic. And I was just thinking, like, because I drank that at dinner, so you feel like you're having a boozy fun time and chatting, but then you leave and you feel completely fine. And I was like, this really is the future. Like, yeah. I would rather, the biggest thing that stops me from not drinking when I go out on a weeknight or even on weekends sometimes is just the feeling that it's so boring to have a glass of water or like a Diet Coke. If you could literally order something that looks fun and feels fun and tastes nice, the alcohol's just like, I don't know, 5% of it.
It's not really necessary most of the time.
And then it makes it special when you do it and it's really fun, but it like, you don't need to do it 4 nights a week.
Yeah. When I had the month off, I was like, I didn't need it any of these nights apart from like two, when I was exhausted and so sick of like being outside and just needed a little pick-me-up, or felt just thing. But also, like, you could probably recontextualize your brain to not even think of it in that way. You're all like, I needed to lean on the alcohol for my personality a bit. But other than that, yeah, I was getting like virgin margaritas. Yeah. And like having a great time. There's a one called Non, actually, that's Australian. Non-alcoholic wine, and it's delicious. They have like an orange one.
Amazing. Yeah, I think I'm gonna explore.
Yeah, when you lean into that, like that's again, ear one. Like last night, my friend was coming around for dinner. And instead of buying us alcohol, I bought two of the non-alcoholic Aperol spritzers and an orange and cut the orange up, put ice in a glass and poured them in. And it felt like we were having a drink before dinner.
Yeah, it still feels fun and special. I think that's the thing about not drinking is it doesn't feel special. And you're like, I want to feel
special.
Special.
Okay, with that, we must
dumbest
go.
Dumbest girl in London. And I want to feel special.
First issue of Elle.
A bottle of non-alcoholic wine on the cover. Okay, bye, girlies.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.